Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, what a Monday we'll have. This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We are live in sunny and beautiful Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Could have our best show in a long time. 1 hour from now, Colin Wright, Colin Wrong. 30 minutes from now, Joe Thomas, one of the great left tackles in the history of the NFL and a Cleveland Brown lover and embracer and hugger, will be joining us in 30 minutes to explain last night. Joy Taylor is joining me. Fun football yesterday. We got a lot of good young quarterbacks in this league. Wow, lots of them.
It was a great college weekend, too.
Wow, not for Jim Harbaugh.
Yes.
That was awful. Joy and I will be joining you for the next 3 hours. Let me start with this. Everybody's going to beat up on Cleveland because of the fourth down and nine. They ran a draw. No team in the NFL has done that in 12 years. So we could bang on Freddie Kitchens. But this morning is all about what I tell young broadcasters. Do your homework. Have strong opinions. And don't worry how it lands. No reasonable person, no reasonable media person that I respect. And I'm not talking, like blog guy. I'm talking about people that do this for a living, have made a lot of money 10, 20, 30 years. Thought the Browns were anything more than a potential wild card team that was fun but had all sorts of holes. And that's exactly what they are, and that's exactly what I predicted. And it wasn't like I'm patting myself on the back. This stuff was all predictable by Cleveland. We told you they're going to be great at wide receiver, very young, very fun. Check, they are. We said offensive line will be the weakness of the team, and we think it will limit what they can do in some of their passing routes, some of their passing game. Check. We told you John Dorsey hired Freddie Kitchens because he can control him. He would not have been hired as a coordinator for any other team. This, in a coaching league, is a mistake. He'll be over his head at least early. Check. We told you their schedule's brutal until about November 15th. And they'll probably lose a lot of early games, but they have a chance, if they stay healthy, to win a bunch of games late. The first part of that, check. And we also told you they're the youngest NFL team, the youngest NFL roster, so they're going to make mistakes, and they're going to lose games they should win, and that this is going to be a team that's going to make a lot of mistakes, but they'll be fun to watch. Check. They lead the NFL in penalty yards, tied for most in penalties. None of these were wild proclamations. None were great predictions. We told you individually that giving up your second-best offensive lineman to the New York Giants with a young quarterback for Olivier Vernon, who's got no sacks in three games and only a handful of tackles, was a big mistake. It has been. Olivier Vernon's not producing, and your offensive line is getting worked. We told you that John Dorsey, the reason he got run out of Kansas City, which has been better since he left, is because he was loud, too much ego, and tended to like flashy players and not to worry about character. What does Cleveland lack right now? Character. Penalties. No identity. Wearing watches in the middle of games. Guys looking for brand over performance. And a control freak, and Kansas City wouldn't give him control, and he wanted to control John Dorsey did, so he hired a Freddie Kitchens, a position coach. We also told you that don't overpredict and make a target of yourself. Be humble, hardworking. The wins will come, and at the end of the year, you're going to have 8 or 9 wins and be in the playoff discussion, and I still think that is true. I also told you Baker Mayfield is talented. But to be successful in Cleveland, he's going to have to overcome constant dysfunction. And my gut feeling this morning is Freddie Kitchens is going to have about 2 more games like that. And John Dorsey, whose career is tied to him, is going to start making calls and replace him by the end of the year. So that'll mean Baker will be on his 4th coach in 3 years. Check that box too. And again, these are not wild proclamations. These are not great. Out of the blue, where did you see it coming? Man, Colin, football predictions. Every reasonable person knew this. Plus, when LeBron left, It left a gaping hole in Cleveland for a new hero, and people have wrapped their arms around Baker Mayfield, but he's 5'11 and a half. You can actually make the argument he throws the ball better moving out of the pocket than in it because he can't see over the line, and he runs too much for me because I don't think he's a great athlete. He's 5'11 and a half. He was a two-time walk-on. He's a good athlete. He's not special. He's Johnny Manziel. He's Tim Tebow. He's good. He's not Lamar. He's not Steve Young. You know, he's not Mahomes. He's not Kyler Murray. You know, you're not that kind of athlete, but he's a good athlete. Certainly, you know, better than, you know, a handful of guys. But the reality is, none of what is happening to Cleveland was hard to spot. Baker's 30th in completions. That's what happens. He's also second most interceptions. That's what happens when you don't have time to throw in this league and you have a rookie head coach. That's what happens. Don't confuse hater for accurate. I'm not a hater on Russell Westbrook. I was accurate. I'm not a hater on Baker Mayfield in Cleveland. But when you have a historically kind of inept franchise, when you give them a glimmer of hope, they massively overreact. And this morning, I would say Cleveland is the most predictable team in the league. I predicted Tennessee would beat them. I predicted they'd beat the Jets. I predicted they'd lose last night. They're 1-2. They're going to get rolled in Baltimore. It's already a blazing 5 pick. I'll give it to you now. The line's 5.5. This stuff was predictable. Don't confuse accuracy for hate. Let me shift to this. New York City's got Daniel Jones fever. Football's hard. It's really hard. Football practice is hard. OTAs are hard. You're wearing gear. It's hot. Yesterday was hard. You're in Tampa. You trail 12-3. You trail 28-10. But what Daniel Jones gave the Giants yesterday in that locker room, and this is really important, he gave them juice and he gave them hope. Even when they were down and Saquon Barkley got hurt, you could sense from the defensive effort, you could sense from the receivers, you could sense from the effort, the Giants thought they were in the game. You're down to Tampa 28-10 with Eli. You've seen this for 3 years. There's no juice in the locker room. There's no juice on the field. You're down 12-3 early with Eli. There were two plays in that game, and Daniel Jones and Eli are very similar players. Size, the way they look in a uniform, they throw the ball the same way. They even have a connection to David Cutcliffe, who was Eli's coach at Ole Miss and was Daniel's coach at Duke. I mean, they're all sorts of similar. Here's where they're not. Feet. So Daniel Jones, this was a big third down, gets into a situation. They're trailing 12-3. And this is one of these moments in a football game where Daniel Jones scrambles outside. Look at him here. Eli can't make this play. And this ended up being a huge, huge momentum turner. First and goal at the 8 to Saquon Barkley. Eli simply can't make that play. And that play is forgotten by the end of the night. It's forgotten. That's juice. That's hope. That's, in a sport that's hard, that's the kind of play that guys go, we're back in it. Because that 12-3 trailing right there, that could be game over. You're praying for a 42-yard field goal. And then there was a play after this later in the game. Now, Eli probably gets a field goal on this drive. But Daniel Jones got a touchdown on a zone read. Now, watch this. Again, how many times have the New York Giants last 3 years had the ball there and settled for a field goal? Eli can't make that play. You get 4 more points than Eli. I'm not knocking Eli. But these guys have a lot of similarities. But when you have an average offensive line or a bad offensive line, Arizona, New York Giants, you know what you need? You need juice. You need legs. You need mobility. You need hope. And that's what I saw with New York yesterday. That 28-10 with Eli, you're done. Guys don't play as hard. They don't run the routes as crisp. They don't block as hard for the extra second. Because in Tampa, it's 90 degrees. You're trailing. You've lived this life. You don't feel you have juice. But all those Giants players have been on that practice field. They've been in these OTAs with Daniel, and they've seen how he can run. They've seen how he can run. I remember years ago, players tell me that about Michael Vick. They're like, you could be down with Michael, but he was just crazy. And Michael would peel off a run, and you're like, okay, we're right back in the game. With Eli, there were these games where you fell behind and you knew we're just going to settle for field goals. And that's what Daniel Jones gives you, is when you're average offensive line and you're not a complete team and you're rebuilding. Kyler Murray's doing this to Arizona. Now, they lost yesterday, but Kyler Murray did this to Arizona. Arizona was throwing haymakers until the last play of that game. Football is hard. You need juice, especially when you're rebuilding, when your offensive line is bad. And most of these plays, you will forget about. Everybody in New York's talking about the missed field goal by the Tampa Bay kicker. It's those two plays that kept drives alive and got you a 7 instead of a 3 that are going to keep the Giants playing hard, trailing on the road, inclement weather, hot as you know what, feeling hopeless the last 3 years. And it was fun to watch, by the way, because I think the NFL, Joy and I said this, NFL's better when the Giants are fun. And the last several years, they've just been tired. They're just not fun. And they get down early, and you're just like, unless you live in New York, you just turn the TV off. You're like, okay, they're down 12-3 early. Seacrest out. Oh, they're down 28-10. This is ugly. I never, ever felt that yesterday. Giants have their quarterback.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
You know, the NFL's 16 games, and you always feel like you have to win 10 or 11 to get to the playoffs, and there's one game a week, so there's a sense of urgency and importance of the games that baseball doesn't have, or the MLS doesn't have, or hockey, or the NBA doesn't have. You have this urgency, but you can lose all sorts of games. You can lose 7 games and get into the playoffs, and you can learn a lot in losses. What I tend to do when my Blazing Five's been very hot, I look at teams that were good in losses and teams that were overrated in wins. San Francisco's 3-0, but they're a mess, a turnover mess. I'm going to tell you something. Baltimore has a chance to be scary. If you go look at that box score against Kansas City, the fireworks show of the league. First downs, Baltimore had more. Passing first downs, Baltimore had as many. Fourth down efficiency, Baltimore was better. Total yards, close. Rushing, Baltimore. Red zone, both great. Possession, Baltimore. Okay, that's in Kansas City. That's facing Andy Reid. That's facing the best offensive personnel in the league. 90% of the teams in this league walk in there and get run over yesterday. Baltimore, their offensive line was better than Kansas City's. Their pass rush was more consistent. Their running game was better, and their secondary was better. Yes, they couldn't stop Patrick Mahomes. Congratulations. Nobody will for the next decade. That's why, by the way, that's why Belichick rolled the dice on Antonio Brown, because he knows his defense can't stop him, and his defense is the best I've seen in years. I mean, that New England knows they can't stop Kansas City. They couldn't stop him in the third and fourth quarter last year in the playoffs. And Baltimore does something. Now, Lamar was choppy. Lamar was inartistic. Lamar's got a long way to go. But they won time of possession. They've won time of possession in every game this year. Baltimore does what you have to do to beat great quarterbacks. Make them watch the game like this on the sidelines. Baltimore had that ball. And that's with a young quarterback. Now, Lamar has got a long way to go. But he did target 9 different receivers. He throws a very nice over-the-top ball. He's super mobile. But when you watch Baltimore, don't get caught up on that loss. Physically, they completely pass the eye test. They have an excellent coach, a tremendous offensive line, all sorts of offensive weapons. They are hyper-aggressive up front defensively. Their secondary was better than Kansas City's. And I say that knowing their secondary got burnt. But that's because Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, they're just different players right now. Mahomes is probably the best quarterback in the league, and Lamar Jackson's a young kid like Daniel Jones. He doesn't know how to read the field yet. That's not where he's at. These young quarterbacks, Russell Wilson admits, third year, light went on. Takes a long time. So Baltimore blew me away. The eye test, the physicality, they were never out of that game. They were never, ever out of that game. And they're going to be very different. They're going to be more, they're going to be contrarian to the league. They're going to be very physical. I loved yesterday the coaching staff going forward on fourth down. They're like, hey, we're going to own this time of possession thing. And they didn't get the 2-point conversions. That's okay. In Kansas City, I love kind of their identity. Listen, when you watch Baltimore, you feel like, oh, I know what they are. When I watch Cleveland, I see all this talent offensively. I'm like, I don't know what Cleveland is. Why don't they run Nick Chubb more? I can't figure Cleveland out. I can figure Baltimore out in 2 series. They've got a direction, a point of view. They've got a kind of a macro view on what they are. And watch out for Baltimore. They're a 5.5-point favorite over Cleveland. I was guessing driving in today. I told the team as we prepared, I said, what's the line on that? My guess was 6. Cleveland gets down on this team, they won't get the ball back. I mean, Cleveland won't get the ball back because the Baltimore may win time of possession in 15 to 16 weeks. Watch out for them.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
All right, he's one of the all-time great players in NFL history, and I don't say that about a lot of people that come on the show. 11 years, he was a 10-time Pro Bowler. In my life, there's been 4 or 5 left tackles. Anthony Munoz, Jonathan Ogden, Walter Jones. I go way, way, way back to John Hanna as a kid, Sports Illustrated cover, New England left tackle, and Joe Thomas. And he is one of the most respected guys in the league, and he does a podcast now, NFL Network stuff, the Tomahawk Show by Uninterrupted, and he is joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network. So last week, Joe, I thought you were very honest, and we patted you on the back for this. It's very difficult to be in Cleveland. LeBron left. Baker is – he's the hero, and he should be. He's your franchise. But you said something last week about the offense, and we talked about it. You said it's unsettling. It's easy for me to criticize Baker, but I will say this. I don't like the play calling, and here's my big problem, Joe. I don't know what they are offensively. That's my knock. You're in the city. You see practice. Does that bother you? What is their identity on offense?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I said that the offense has been a little bit unsettling, because they haven't got into a rhythm. And when they get into those moments where you have to have a play that's made at the end of a game, we don't know what they're going to do really well. And sometimes you can use that to your advantage because that makes you unpredictable. But when you get into those situations and you don't have something that you can fall back on that you feel good about calling, like, hey, we're a team that we can run the football on anybody. Or, hey, you know what? OBJ can get open against anybody, and we know we can throw it in tight windows, and that's what we're going to hang our hat on. And right now they don't have that. And so I think you're seeing a lack of rhythm on that offense, and that's causing a lack of long drives for them. And that's really hurt them because they don't have the ability right now to just move the ball steadily down the field and go get a score. It's been kind of a boom or bust mentality with that offense.
Are you worried about Freddie Kitchens? Everybody this morning will clobber him on, you know, OBJ didn't get any targets down the stretch, but let me defend him there. Amari Cooper got 7 targets yesterday. Devontae Adams got 4. Nick Chubb's good. Jarvis Landry. You guys got plenty of offensive player. Your backup tight end's a hell of a player. So I'm not going to bang on him for OBJ. But there are a lot of penalties, no kind of identity offense. Are you concerned about Freddie Kitchens being a little over his skis right now?
Well, I think he's got a lot of really smart coaches in that staff that can clearly help him out. But you are a little bit concerned just from what you've seen so far from the offense. It is a team with a lot of talent, especially on that offensive skill player position. And I think that's been part of the hard thing about finding that identity is when you have all that talent, you got to figure out, okay, what are we going to do in crunch moments? Are we going to be a team that gives the ball to Nick Chubb? Or are we going to be a team that gives the ball to Odell Beckham? And they haven't really been able to sort it out just yet. Who is going to be their stud? Who is going to be their warhorse that they're going to ride in critical moments? And it'll be up to Freddie Kitchens to figure that out because, like I said, they have a lot of talent. Now they just got to figure out how all that talent can fit together and become a team.
Joe, you played hard every Sunday. In football, film is the truth. So I don't think teams rarely bail. I am concerned a little about the Jets. Are you worried with all these road games? Good Lord, at San Francisco, at Baltimore looked good this weekend, New England, Denver. Are you concerned that this is a very young team, Joe? Young players tend to be more emotional, that they could go sideways and unravel here if they go on a 4-game losing streak?
Well, that was the concern when you look at this schedule in the summer and when the schedule came out. Was this is a really difficult stretch that they're going through right now. And with this young and inexperienced team, it is easier to get on that emotional roller coaster. But I do think that right now, starting out the season 1-2 actually could possibly help them because Baker, his whole career has thrived on that underdog mentality. And I think he is a guy that wants that chip on his shoulder. He doesn't want anybody to give him any chance. And as Baker goes, this team is going to go. And so I think starting out the way they did and hearing the criticism nationally and even locally from how their offense has performed and the lack of rhythm that we've seen can really be a rallying cry where they can circle the wagons. And I do think that this stretch, while it's going to be tough, they're going to find a lot about themselves. And I think this is actually the type of situation that Baker wants to be in. He's not the guy, even though he enjoys this being the center of attention. I don't think he does his best work when he has all that hype. He does his best work when he's got his chip on his shoulder and nobody's given him a chance.
I want to move off to Daniel Jones. And I said this yesterday. I love Eli Manning. I love Archie Manning, Cooper Manning, Eli. I've never met Peyton. They're wonderful people. They're NFL royalty. But I did feel like with Eli in the last 3 to 4 years, when you got down in the road, it really felt hopeless. And when you give me the Kyler Murrays and the Lamars and the Daniel Jones that can make plays happen with their feet, there's a juice, there's a component that you got a playmaker back there. What do we make of Daniel Jones early? What do you think he adds? Your thoughts on a young guy that it seemed like yesterday, even down by 18 points, they were never out of that game.
Well, they keep making the comparison with Daniel Jones, saying he's just like a young Eli Manning. But this guy can run the football. Nobody was going to be confused watching Eli Manning run, thinking he was Saquon Barkley. And so when you're a one-dimensional quarterback, you've got to be really, really good, really, really accurate, and very good with your decision-making if you're no threat to run the football. And now they add a different dimension with Daniel Jones, being able to be back there, run some of these RPOs, and give these defenses something else to think about and something to prepare for. And as a young quarterback who maybe doesn't yet have his PhD in coverages and different blitzes and looks that a defense is going to give him, to be able to run the football and escape the pocket and buy a little bit more time with your feet, that's the recipe for success when you're a young quarterback. We saw it with Russell Wilson. We've seen it now with Daniel Jones, and you're seeing it with Gardner Minshew down in Jacksonville. To be able to run with the football in your hand as a young quarterback, that gives you the opportunity for success. To be able to just stand back there and throw the football, if that's all you can do as a rookie quarterback, you're probably not going to have success, because the level that the NFL has from a defensive standpoint is so much greater and so much more complex than what they saw in college. I do believe it's like getting a doctorate. You need 3 years of watching NFL film and being in those NFL meetings before you can really confidently break down a defense and watch that secondary and not get confused on a consistent basis. So running with the football as a young quarterback is vital to success, and we saw Daniel Jones do a good job of that yesterday.
Listen, San Francisco's 3-0, but they've been choppy, and they're young. They're just making a ton of mistakes. Like Cleveland, sometimes they shoot themselves in the foot. Baltimore lost to Kansas City, Joe, but that offensive line and that running game, that time of possession, you guys go to Baltimore. There are times when you lose games in this league, and I come on the air Monday and I'm like, that is a good team. I was kind of blown away by Baltimore yesterday. What do you make of Lamar Jackson at this point and that offense?
Well, if you're able to run the football in the NFL, you can keep up with anybody, especially when you're playing a good rushing defense on the other side of the football. The concern that I have right now in Baltimore is their secondary. The way that they're having communication issues consistently on a weekly basis, giving up all sorts of yards through the air, that's something that's going to be hard, even if they do run the football and they squeeze the football offensively, winning the time of possession battle. When the other team's able to get back there and just throw it at will on your secondary, that's going to be a big concern long-term. But they've got the formula. As long as Lamar Jackson's able to stay healthy, to be able to run the football, not only with Mark Ingram in their traditional running game with their running backs, but to have that threat of a quarterback who can run and then also some of the RPOs and some of the deep shots that they take off of it, they're going to be dangerous and they're different. And that's what makes them hard to defend. And they're not going to be like any other team that these guys see. And so when they do match up against a New England or a Kansas City, they're going to give them fits, and they could really realistically beat any team in the NFL on any Sunday.
Finally, 30 seconds to a minute left. That's the best Wisconsin defense I think I've ever seen. We can bang on Harbaugh. I said this yesterday. Jonathan Taylor's the best college running back I've seen since Zeke, and I include Saquon Barkley. I think he's more complete. I got to tell you, as a Badger, is this the best Wisconsin team ever?
Well, I hope you're right by saying that. I'm not sure I'm ready to crown them as the best team from Wisconsin ever, but certainly they have the makings of what a great Wisconsin team looks like. And since I was born, the best teams from Wisconsin were always teams that had a great running back, they could run the football at will, and they had a really, really tough defense. But more than anything, they were kind of made up of no-name guys, like guys that you hadn't been hearing about all year long. It was that blue-collar mentality, almost like we were talking about with Baker. Wisconsin teams have always thrived when nobody's given them a chance, and they have that blue-collar mentality where they can kind of circle the wagons and use that as a rallying cry the whole year. Outside of Jonathan Taylor, who you mentioned, everybody in the country knows who that is. You can't really name a lot of guys on this team, and yeah. I think that just sets up perfectly for the type of team that Wisconsin always wants to be when they're really good.
Joe Thomas, you were great. Played in 10,363 consecutive snaps, an NFL record. You're a tremendous young broadcaster. Keep kicking butt. The podcast is called The Tomahawk Show, uninterrupted weekly podcast. NFL veterans, former teammates. Joe, you're going to be okay. Baltimore could be tough for your Brownies, but after that, I think there's wins on the horizon. Good luck.
Well, I appreciate it. Hey, we win in Baltimore. We're in first place in the AFC North. So don't forget that, Browns fans. All is not lost.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Every Monday at this time, I have strong opinions. Many of you like them. Many of you do not. But when I'm wrong, I just say, okay, whiffed on that one. Here we go.
Where Colin was right.
Boy, I've been money on Blazing 5. 4-0-1 yesterday. Called the Giants upset. Called the Rams over the Brown. I said the Lions would give Philadelphia fits, and the Steelers lost but covered. Now, I got some breaks. The Niners basically gave that puppy away. They tried to anyway. I also do a Saturday podcast, and I do a bonus pick just on that. And my bonus pick was Saints would cover against Seattle. So in the last couple of weeks, we have been on fire. This is probably the early season is the hardest for me because a lot of teams have new coaches, new coordinators, and don't have an identity. So it's hard for me to get my arms around teams in the first couple of weeks. In fact, I've already made my Blazing 5 picks for this week because I think it's easier now to see what teams can do and what they can't. So we're off to a really hot start.
Where Colin was wrong.
Not only, it's not just that Michigan lost, it's how they lost, 28-0. And again, Wisconsin has the best running back in the country, maybe the best offensive line, and this is the best Wisconsin defense I've ever seen. But where I'm really wrong on this is I always felt Harbaugh came into a school and added a layer of toughness. He did this at Stanford, where you if it was a backyard alley fight, you would take a Harbaugh team. But Urban Meyer, and I don't think he enjoyed doing this, called out Harbaugh on this very issue.
It's all about toughness and effort. That's the first place you start. I'd have a team meeting. I'd go through every play. It'd be miserable. Forget spread. This conversation is well beyond that. There's about a toughness, and it has to be. It has to be. How did that happen? I mean, it's got to be toughness, and it's got to be effort. Because you cannot start saying that there's NFL players all over that field. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, they have no identity, and maybe it's Josh Gattis, the new coordinator. I heard basically Harbaugh hired him without a face-to-face meeting. That's not great. And I understand as a college coach, you're losing coordinators constantly. And Gattis is known as a little bit of a self-promoter, whatever. That's Jim's responsibility at $7 million a year. You know, I had talked to Jimmy Johnson yesterday. He said the two things you got to get right is you're a football head coach. You got to get the offensive line right and the offensive coordinator right. And right now, it's not working for Michigan.
Where Colin was right?
I'll say it again with Cam Newton. Stop telling me they don't have weapons. Carolina's weapons are excellent offensively. And Kyle Allen used all of them yesterday. Curtis Samuel's a great young receiver. DJ Moore, to me, is more talented. Christian McCaffrey's a little bug. Can't even see him, and the guy's strong and runs. Greg Olsen, he's a Hall of Fame tight end talent. Cam, you got to see him once in a while. I saw Kyle Allen do things like audible, check down out of plays, check out of bad plays. Stop telling me Cam doesn't have weapons. Now, Cam's hurt now, and I'm not denying that. But this is not about a personnel issue. This is a Cam who's distracted issue. By the way, he's doing Instagram fashion shoots before the games on Sunday. Stop it already.
Where Colin was wrong.
The Steelers season's over. Listen, I said it, then I said, no, I'm wrong. And then I watched them, and it's over. They've just lost too many good people. I mean, Le'Veon Bell, they have no running game now. James Conner has regressed. I mean, I like Juju Smith-Schuster. Not Antonio Brown. They've lost Big Ben. They lost Ryan Shazier. And they've got good young players filling in. Mason Rudolph and Juju Smith-Schuster and Devin Bush. But they're kids. You don't win in this league with kids. That's why I didn't like Cleveland as much as everybody else. They can't run the foot. What do they do well? This morning, what does Pittsburgh do really well? I can't put my finger on it. So I do think now the season's over.
Where Colin was right.
We said the Saints will be fine without Drew Brees. A-plus coach. Their defense is terrific. Teddy Bridgewater's a grown-up. His flaw is Drew Brees' flaw, which is he's not going to vertically extend plays. And frankly, they've got Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas, a better-than-average offensive line. This was never going to blow up. Their schedule, I thought this was the toughest game. They stayed on the West Coast and won. And I'm not saying Drew Brees isn't good, but Bridgewater is a reasonable facsimile, same size, situationally not Drew, but he's kind of got the same flaw, Drew. He doesn't throw the ball down the field big. But this is a very good organization. And we said, I don't have them winning their division, but I didn't think the Drew Brees 6-week injury would be man overboard, and it certainly wasn't.
Where Colin was wrong.
Adam Gase, your team quit yesterday. I think it's the second time in 2 weeks they've quit. Listen, I'm not a body language expert, but it matters. Coordinator is about being smart. Head coach is about being a leader and sending signals and messages to the troops. Adam Gase, I never see his eyes, pulls the hat down, and this guy's out, and this guy's out. Hey, Brian Flores is a big energy guy, is a bottom line guy. There's no hat. He's looking at me and saying, we're not quitting. You quit, you're out of here. That at least permeates and echoes through the locker room. Adam Gase right now, I'm told, doesn't get along with Greg Williams. This downcast, this sort of negative energy, it's bleeding to the team. Listen, when your bad teams overlook you, Miami should have let it halftime yesterday. The advantage to being bad is teams don't get up for you. They occasionally rest a starter that's banged up a little bit. Adam Gase has been disappointing so far.
Where Colin was right.
We told you the number one issue with the Browns would be offensive line. We said, just watch out. They traded away a very good offensive lineman for Olivier Vernon, and this has been the team's flaws. We can beat up on Freddie Kitchens. Baker sacked 3 times yesterday, 5 times against Tennessee, 3 times against the Jets, constantly flushed out of the pocket. Now, it's a decent run-blocking offensive line. It is not a good pass-blocking offensive line. So, again, we can. There's a lot of ways to dissect this loss. But the macro take on this is, we told you, you cannot have a bad offensive line and win playoff games in this league. You got to have the quarterback right, the coach right, and the O-line right. And this O-line is a problem.
Where Colin was wrong.
And once again, I've whiffed completely on the Atlanta Falcons. Why do I keep defending them? I mean, seriously, they are a drop pass from 0-3. Every year, I'm like Super Bowl.
You do this every year.
I'm over them. I am just over them. By the way, they brought in Dirk Cutter as an offensive coordinator. Very sharp guy. But Matt Ryan's already got 6 picks in 3 games. Last year, he had 7 all year. Julio Jones is unbelievable. But outside of Julio, I don't see a lot of stuff on this team I love right now. They don't tend to play well away from home. They've been off to really slow starts. Jacoby Brissett controlled them for most of the game yesterday. I can't get Atlanta right. I'm over Atlanta.
Where Colin was right.
We told you the New York Giants had a plan with Daniel Jones. They released that video in OTAs, slow motion video with music. He's unbelievable. Then in the preseason, they played the offensive linemen, the starters, more snaps to make Daniel Jones look good. Then they were going to play Eli the first 2 weeks against good defenses. And then they bring him in against Tampa, which didn't have a Pro Bowler last year on defense. I felt from the beginning this was an orchestrated plan. They would make him look good in OTAs. They would play starters, more snaps to help him look good. And then they would bring him in a nice spot. And Tampa's a team defensively that's got all sorts of issues. I do like Todd Bowles, the coordinator. But I felt from the beginning this was a setup to make him look good. And they made him look good.
where Colin was right?
Deshaun Watson, I said it when he came out of Clemson. I said he's not a natural thrower, but leadership, humble, driven, playmaker. He's a magician back there, escape artist. The kid's incredible. I'm not sure there's another quarterback in this league that could deal with the chaos on the offensive line like him. He's the best quarterback in this division. He has a chance, if he can stay healthy, to win a lot of games and a lot of division titles. It is not a complete team. Their secondary is suspect, and their O-line's better on the left side, but not complete. How he dropped to the third quarterback. We joke about this sometimes off the air. People were trying to talk their way out of Deshaun Watson. He played Nick Saban twice. Nick had 6 weeks to prepare for him twice. Had a total of 20 NFL players on those defenses, and they couldn't stop him. Nick Saban doesn't lose with 6 weeks to prepare. He split with him, and he couldn't stop him. Deshaun Watson's magic.
Where Colin was wrong.
Finally, Game of Thrones dominated the Emmys again. I guess ice zombies, dragons, and sorcerers are still cool. How can a show that nobody liked at the end of last year win? How can a show that nobody can see won? They shot this thing in a closet. It's so dark, I can never see the characters. And by the way, it's supposed to be in this amazing, it's supposed to be like in a time far away, like the 15th, 16th century.
It's not a real time.
Well, they're trying to make you believe it's
not like based on a true story.
Okay, but then how come there's a Starbucks cup in one episode they left on?
Because it was the last season and everyone was tired.
Okay, and there was a Ford F-150 in another episode parked in the back.
Again.
And there's a water bottle. You can't win an Emmy if you can't take Starbucks cups off the set.
It's one of the greatest shows ever made in the history of television.
Except for the
shows.
Fact that everybody hated it last year.
They didn't hate it. They just would have liked it to end differently.
If I left this on the set, would I win an Emmy if I turned this in? Hi, everybody. Welcome to The Herd. And this was on the whole show, and you couldn't see my face.
In all fairness, it wasn't that obvious, and it's because half the world watched the show that they noticed that there was a Starbucks coffee. You know, it's long shoots, very cold.
You can't see it. It'd be like turning the show off, turning our lights off here, and I win an Emmy. You can't see anything.
I disagree. I have seen every episode of that show.
Barely. You have glasses, otherwise you couldn't.
Game of Thrones is amazing, Colin. It's not for everyone. I understand. It's very divisive.
We're going to turn in our Emmy reel this year for the Herd.
Everyone wants to act too cool for the dragons and stuff. I get it. I'm a
never
nerd.
Never existed, so.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Michael Vick, 4-time Pro Bowler, leading rusher in NFL history from the quarterback position. All sorts of guys running around right now in the NFL.
Man,
it's fun.
Running all over the place.
They
it's
are.
A great thing
but
to see.
Let's talk about Daniel Jones because he may not be Lamar Jackson, but when I watched him yesterday, I got to be honest, for a first NFL start, 90 degrees in Tampa, you're trailing big. I kind of liked it.
I mean, versus a decent defense and a tough place to play.
Yes.
You know, down in Tampa.
You played there twice
start,
a year.
Yeah, I mean, when they was, you know, back in the heyday.
Right.
You know, he showed us some things that we haven't seen before in New York in a long time. And I will say we haven't seen that before because it's been a long time since they had a mobile guy.
Right.
You know, a little RPO, you know, got the touchdown that he scrambled for right here.
He's got straight line speed.
Yeah, he can move a little bit, and I think that helps. You know, that's going to help Pat Sherman with his play calling moving forward. But it was just good to see, you know, Daniel Jones step in, really be confident, and lead his team to victory and get that first win.
By the way, was your first game home or away?
My first game
first
was
start.
My first start was on the road in Green Bay.
And how'd you do?
In 2002. And I played really well. But it was my second year, not my rookie year. Rookie year, I wasn't ready.
Okay.
I wasn't ready to compete. I wasn't mentally prepared to play the quarterback position.
Were you nervous?
I was very nervous.
Okay, so Daniel's nervous.
And nervous because the pressure of losing, and in the back of my mind, I just didn't want to be a bust. That was a big thing for me. I'm like, everything I do moving forward is critical, and it has to be well calculated. And that's why I say for a young rookie to go out and get a win, that's paramount for him.
So I was on Twitter last night. I said about Baker Mayfield, I said, you know, he's too prone to bail on the pocket. But this morning I went on Twitter, and a lot of people I respect are like, actually, statistically, he's better throwing the ball moving than he is stationary. Now, again, I don't look at Baker and think of you, but I do think a lot of his best plays have been kind of ad-libbing. Did you sometimes, when you watch Baker, is it possible he feels better moving and throwing?
Yeah, ad-libbing and outside of the pocket. When I think about some of his best plays, you know, I kind of see him just scrambling and winging it a little bit and, you know, being accurate doing it. But not a lot of highlights that, you know, I've seen inside the pocket. You know, which is why they should move him. And because of his height, they should move him around.
Now, talk about his height. Now, that's something that's not a small thing.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson talked about this early. They needed throwing lanes for Russell to see through.
Right.
Is it possible Baker's bailing because he's 5'11 and a half?
Yeah, he's trying to find a lane, or he just doesn't see, you know, the receivers downfield. And you don't look at the receivers, you look at the defenders. So you have to be able to see the defenders. And his pre-snap reads are really, really good. He does that well. But getting outside of the pocket, everything opens up. The field vision is open. And you know, you got a clearer picture of what's going on down the field. So I think that's one of the things that plays into you know, his game as far as how he delivers the football and how he spreads the ball around. He has to be able to see. And I think throwing lanes is something that he's looking for.
By the way, I want to show we have a play. Guys in the back. I got to bang on Freddie Kitchens a little bit. So they were running the football effectively.
Yeah.
And then they were deep in their own territory. They had plenty of time. And they started running routes where, listen, their offensive line is not a good pass blocking line. And you had wide receivers running down the field back to Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
And Aaron Donald is eating you alive. Now, these are some of them. I hated this offensive series by Freddie Kitchens. I mean, come on. They did run, they picked up seven.
Yeah.
No, when you watch these plays, they're running like long crossing patterns.
Look at
the receivers.
Routes.
Now watch this, Michael. Jesus, they're running.
Yeah, that's an all-go concept, and that means you're trying to hit something deep, but you can't do that without being in the six-man protection. That's a five-man protection, which means they're trying to block five on four, because most of the time you get four defensive linemen. You do gain an advantage with one offensive lineman in a five-man protection.
But you can do that with
four.
A better offensive line.
But you can't do that versus Aaron Donald. And then you got Dante Fowler, who's starting to turn into a game record.
Yeah.
So that should have been taken into account during film study during the week. Let's stay out of these five-man protections, more six-man protections. Keep a back end. You can keep a running back in the backfield and still accomplish the same thing they're trying to do now.
Yeah, I hated this series. I hated it because
– Yeah, that's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking for post patterns.
Yeah. It's too much trying to develop. You know, they're trying to get too many things to develop down the field. I mean, look at these guys. They, you know, 30, 40 yards into their routes and not even looking back, like you said. I mean, you got Aaron Donald on the field. It should be more, you know, crossing routes. You
By
know,
the way, the week before,
routes.
They scored a touchdown on a slant pattern to OBJ.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, quick screens. Screens to the running back. You got to do things that negate the pass rush. You know, obviously, Baker didn't mix up his snap counts because that's one thing I'd have been doing, you know, just in taking into consideration to keep the defensive line at bay. It's a lot of teaching and the correcting needs to happen for this Cleveland Browns team, and doesn't get any better with Baltimore.
Three things in the NFL I've watched and said, wow. New England's defense, wow. Kansas City's offense, wow. And Dallas's talent.
Yeah.
And it just
everywhere.
Dudes. And they're all young,
and
they're all healthy. I know Miami's crappy. When you see Dallas, what do you see?
I see the same thing you just said. Talent everywhere. When you look at the receivers, they got guys who can run good routes and catch the ball. They got a quarterback who's in total control. They got a running back who's arguably the best running back in the game. And then the defense that complements the offense and, you know, creates turnovers. They create field position. They do it all well, and they're very well coached. Kellen Moore deserves a lot of credit for what he's doing with Dak Prescott. But overall, just, you know, personnel, you know, this team has been put together the right way, and it's showing. And whether it was the Miami Dolphins or whoever they beat, they line up and they beat
them. We can't reduce the impact of the wins because the teams are bad.
Yeah.
Your eyes don't lie.
Yeah,
when I watched Dallas – I can make an argument, best young talent in football.
Yeah.
Two great linebackers, great corner.
Oh, man. Van Der Esch, he just reminds me of like a modern day Brian Urlacher.
That's exactly what it reminds me of.
Like real talk. He's all over the place. He makes the other guys better around him. You know, DeMarcus Lawrence, he's, you know, been a force for years, and now he's starting to step up and be even better because he has two linebackers behind him that can pick up the slack. They can blitz from anywhere. They got corners. You know, I don't know too much about the safety positions, but they got two good corners. That's quality. This is the team that's going to go deep into the playoffs and could be one of the best teams in the NFC.
I don't think you're nuts on that. Michael Vick is joining us. So I said yesterday, you talked to Lamar. He clearly got bigger in the offseason.
Yeah,
Baker Mayfield was doing commercials. He was doing trap work because, dude, he is jacked.
Stay focused.
Man, they just run. I got to tell you, when I watch him play, I think they're tough. Kansas City's better. But what did you make of Baltimore yesterday?
Baltimore's going to be really hard to beat. That offense that they run could only be contained in a place like Arrowhead. And I don't think Kansas City has the best defense. Their defense is good enough. I think they're like one corner away from being really talented.
They are,
on defense.
Yeah.
But they fell behind. Baltimore fell behind, and their offense didn't look the way it looked, you know, over the
Anything
last
you
weeks.
Did remind you of Baltimore, or has the game changed?
The game has changed a lot.
You would have died for this.
Depending on where I was at, you know, in Atlanta, that offense, it was like staple, something that I would have thrived in. You know, ultimately, you know, you have to be conditioned and you have to be in good physical shape to run an offense like that, which Lamar looked like he is. But, you know, I think at some point it has to evolve into more. You know, just like what we were saying with Baker Mayfield, they have to spread it out a little bit and give a different dynamic, different look. Other than that, you know, it'll become stagnant at times. So that's the last thing they want. But I think they just got a recipe that they can follow for the rest of the year.
It's a formula.
It's a formula that's going to be very hard to stop and hard to guard.
People always knock the two words in the NFL, system and formula. Like, he's a system player. He's a formula player. This league has been dominated by formulas and systems my entire life. It's the teams like Cleveland offensively. I don't know what their system is.
Right.